Rappin' with Reef Bum is sponsored by Champion Lighting and Supply, Polo Reef, and Fauna Marine.
Hey, hey, what's happening, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of Rappin' with Reef Bum. I'm your host, Keith Berkelhammer. So on today's live stream, I welcome back Adam Derrickson from Battle Corals. What's happening there, Adam?
Hey, Keith, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me on again. This is actually number four, and I know last time we don't have to talk about it, but it was a little, we'll call it maybe three and a half because I was sick and things weren't going so well. But I'm ready to roll, man. Like, this is a good time. Things are going well for me, and I've actually been looking forward to this one, where last one, it was kind of like I was dreading it just because I had a little stomach flu.
You were you were not in a good way, man. I think you basically...
I was not in a good way.
You basically were like, I think we need to cancel, and then somehow you were able to rally.
Yeah, well, I think it's kind of like that, like where stage performers, if they're sick or something and they just get that little gusto that lets them kind of do their performance, I had that for about an hour and then we kind of called it short. It was like half a show and that was it. But we don't have to talk about that. That's last year. This is this year, man. I'm feeling great. You know, it's always good to see you again. And, you know, I told Keith I've got all the – I can see the chat room now too, so I, or the comments. So if I see anything that I can answer directly, I'll do it. Or if you see something that stands out, don't be afraid to just – let me know, because it is kind of going fast.
Yeah,
there's a good chance.
And definitely people drop your questions in the chat. This is a great opportunity to ask one of the SPS gurus a question. So don't know who Adam is, he owns Battle Corals. He's one of the most well-known coral vendors out there that specializes in SPS. But you're adding to your catalog, you told me, right? You're adding some bubble tip anemones.
I have finally diversified.
Bubble tip anemones.
Yes, sir. After many years, you know, I've got a couple good friends close to me that have always said, you know, you should do, you know, maybe zoanthids. You've got all this dims area around the corners of your tanks and, you know, stuff like that. You should diversify. And I mean, like, I like what I keep what I like kind of, and I sell what I like. And I've never really even been drawn to, I mean, I'm an SPS guy. I can't really put it any other way. But I have always had a kind of a fondness for bubble tips. You know, even way back in the day, I had a big 90-gallon refugium that was filled with old rose bubble tips, you know. So, I mean, this is something that at least I'm familiar with. And I finally decided to start collecting a little bit more exotic bubble tips. And they've been splitting like crazy, and now I've got, I think it was only about a couple weeks ago, I finally have them on the site. So you can go to Battle Corals, and we don't have to plug the site all night, but
plug away,
there are
man.
Bubble
plug away.
And so there is another product besides SPS on the site, finally, after, you know, 18 years or however long I've been doing this. it's kind of a test, you know. I thought I'd see how it goes. I mean, many years ago, even back in the old site, probably 2012, I gave it a shot. I had a good wholesale hookup for LPS and chalices and zoanthids.
I remember that.
And I mean, there was a point where I just couldn't even give them away. And you know, it might be my enthusiasm might not have been that, you know, high for them. Whatever it was, I was like, okay, this isn't going to work. I'm not going to waste, you know, site space with this kind of stuff. And it's been SPS ever since till now. So you know, they're cool. I have to admit, I like them. They're easy to grow. They are much more forgiving if they don't get there. And, you know, overnight, that sort of thing. So it's just kind of, you know, like peripheral side edges of the tank, you know.
You want to make sure that you have make use of every piece of real estate when you have a reef tank system like yours set up there.
Yeah, and which I'm kind of trying my best. And like I said, I've got friends that have suggested lower light stuff like zoanthids and that sort of thing. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I think that, like, SPS people are kind of crazy. You know, we've got our names and we've got our this, we've got our that. Like the zoanthid people, and I mean, no offense by this, the zoanthid people, it's a whole nother level of like, oh, it's not that because like the little orange part of the like third part of the skirt isn't, you know.
Right. It's got its own little fingerprint.
Yeah. Well, you know, oddly enough, I even had a guy, well, funny, since I've kind of been doing this bubble tip, I've had a few people say like, contact me like, hey, I've got some bubble tips, I'll send them to you, like this is great. And even one guy, a nice guy in Reef to Reef, had said, you know, I actually showed him the picture of the bubble tips that I told you about just a minute ago, and he said, oh no, I don't think those are what I have, because he kind of went on to explain like there's a little white streak, you know, in the inlet. I'm like, oh no, like I'm not, like here we go again. But I will learn, I promise. Like I like bubble tips, my enthusiasm is super high, so if I have to learn all the little nuances of each little, you know, quirky thing, I absolutely will. So far I've got three varieties, so we'll see how it goes.
My experience with bubble tip anemones lasted, I think, 24 hours. I put one in one of my reef tanks, you know, years and years ago, and it got sucked into a power head, and that was the last time I tried it.
yeah, and that seems to be the common fare. Or people have, they just start splitting and they kill all the corp.
Right. That's not good either. Yeah. But,
So I think that's kind of why people are like, hey, I've got some anemones for you. Miss Orchid on Reef to Reef was one of the first people. Those are the anemones that are on my site now. But she said, hey, I've got a bunch of anemones. They multiplied like crazy, and they killed on my coral. Do you want them all? And I got them. She sent them to me free. So, you know, and with any luck, and my buddy Bill, he is eye candy coral, lives 5 minutes away from me, has a really cool yellow one, which he says, you know, it's super rare. It was cultivated by someone. It's like been in captivity for a long time. So point is, I will be expanding, if people buy these things at least, you know, if it's something that people are interested in, I will be very enthusiastic to kind of grow the collection and get some more weird, cool, rare stuff.
All right, man. So we're going to, I'm looking forward to digging in a whole bunch of topics. Before we do, though, I want to take care of some business and thank my sponsors. The sponsors are really important to this show because they make it possible with their support. And that means a lot since I want to continue bringing on awesome guests to help foster a learning environment on the show. Champion Lighting and Supply is one. Besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through the website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. Polar Reef is another sponsor. Make sure to check out Polar Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday and the new Polo University episode. Andrew and Dr. Alex Howell, a well-recognized fish vet, look at ich, Brookenella, and marine velvet in detail. Identification, quarantine, and treatment of these diseases are all covered on a step-by-step basis. Make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polar Reef for video drop notifications. And finally, my third sponsor is Fauna Marine. I do use the Fauna Marine Reef ICP Total Test Kit, which gives a quick, accurate, and easy overview of over 90 water values in reef aquariums, from macro elements to trace elements and pollutants. You get a complete overview with corresponding dosage and action recommendations. All right, man, with all that out of the way, we can get into some nitty gritty.
Actually, no, oddly enough, I can rewind a little bit. I have just recently switched it, and I guess I've been sick calling it Fauna Marin, but Fauna Marine Salt, oddly enough, I've got one box left of Red Sea before I kind of finally, but I have a pallet. See, I'm in front of me, about 2 feet away, is a pallet of Fauna Marine Salt, and I know Todd at
Champion.
Champion, well, too. So a couple of great sponsors. I never met Andy at Polo yet, but
I'm digging.
I can vouch those, and actually Claude from Fauna Marine reached out to me because you get we'll go just for a little bit further with this. No. If you don't mind. You get free ICP test with the salt now. So I've got a box like 30 of these. And I kind of made a post that I sent in some ICB tests, and he reached out to me and said, hey, why don't you let me take a look at those, yada, yada. Cool guy. I mean, someone that just, I mean, I he doesn't really know me from a hole in the ground, and he reached out to me to take a look at the ICB test. So a couple of good sponsors, I say. You got yourself a couple of good sponsors.
Yeah, anyway. I am definitely psyched with my sponsors. They're all, they mean a lot to be able to support this show, and I thank them. Polo 1126, thank you so much for that super chat. This is a comment about battle corals. Best acros in the game. Thanks for all those hyperberries in my order a few weeks ago. With you updating picks on the site, wondering if we'll get updated fairy food pick. Fairy food, remind people what fairy food is.
You knew it was going to come up. Well, that's $1 million coral.
It's $1 million for a frag.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I may have a sale on that one of these days. You'll have to stay tuned. But you know, it kind of exists in this mythical realm, and you know, every once in a while it comes up, and my answers are very ambiguous, and no one really knows what's going on with that coral, and I'll leave it at that. But I will say, however, as far as that goes, I have one kind of major thing that I have updated this year on top of many things is I think last year I was complaining about how I'm having trouble taking pictures, like blue light. I'm just wasn't really happy. And I finally set up a whole new tank for taking pictures. I've kind of got the lighting figured out a little bit better, and I have been taking pictures like crazy. So, you know, there was this big lull in, you know, colony shots, and I'd send out battle boxes with stuff that wasn't on the site, and I get, you know, lots of people asking, you got colony shots of this, you got colony shots of that, yeah. And you know, if anyone who's kind of been paying tune to the site, now I actually have a section that says news, which is actually for new coral, and that has been, you know, almost a revolving door of new stuff, not because it's new to me, but because I finally have been able to take pictures of it. So, I mean, a lot of stuff's been in my system for years, but I just haven't taken a picture of it. So
it is tough to get, you know, accurate pictures of stuff, and it's pretty cool that you have a separate tank. I mean, when you pull a coral out of your one of your systems into that separate photography tank, let's call it, how long do you give it before you take a picture of it? I mean, you're going to lose some polyp extension and all that sort of thing.
That's a good question. Yeah. Well, another reason why it's been a real tedious process is because it is just that. And I've got a little trick. I'll take them out a little bit before lights go out. And then, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours in is when the polyps come out like crazy because it's nighttime. But it's still a commitment to take one picture of one coral, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a tedious task. I mean, I'm not just in there with my little top down taking shots out of the display tank. I have to set it up and yada yada. But, you know, the pictures that go on the site are, I mean, it's worth the time and effort to kind of do that. But I have a couple of tricks up my sleeve as far as getting the polyps out and it making them look like the glory shots,
yeah,
as it were.
Yeah. No.
But it's a pain in the butt. I mean, to have a separate tank. But I've been doing it that way for I guess every picture on the site, man, it's a couple maybe just because of the predicament I've shot.
I'm showing you provided me a little video, overview video of the facility,
cool,
right now. So I'm just kind of like playing that just to give people, if they don't know your place, an idea how big it is. How many gallons are we talking about again, Adam?
That's a good question too. My main system is comprised of 4 foot by, you can kind of see it there, 4 foot by 11 foot raceways. And the water's not very deep in there. It's only about 8 inches deep. And even last year, I separated one of those systems to be on its own. So my main system is now 5 tanks. And I have a separate system. I'm kind of calling that like my experiment tank,
yep,
which is what it is. And I've got my backup system. But to answer your question, my main system now is about 1,200 gallons. So we're not talking about a giant system volume-wise. And I've got a big old sump. But I have a lot of real estate square footage, you know, because the tanks are long and wide and that sort of thing. So I think it's about 1,200 gallons total.
Brent Jones, thank you so much, man, for that super chat. What an awesome guest. Learned about Adam through your prior podcast, and I'm now a battle brush holder. Great sticks from BC.
I don't have one.
I have many battle brushes.
You get one free with every order. So, I mean, unless it's like I was doing this bargain bin thing where I think I kind of discontinued that, because I'll tell you what, people are, and, you know, my customers are the best people in the world. Don't get me wrong. But I would have sales and somehow like those would kind of get included in there. And like, so they were $100 boxes, you just kind of a my choice bottom of it was called the bargain bin box. And they would end up being like $40, you know, with these sales. And I'd be shipping these boxes. Anyway, those maybe were the only ones that didn't get brushes. Any other order, and if you order like 1,000 or 800 bucks, you usually get 2.
Yeah.
So, and lots of stickers. I've been printing my own stickers now too. And all sorts of wacky, funny little things. Here's a funny little, here's a little bat. I'll put that on just for one second.
Nice. what is that?
That's for a sale I got coming. I'll give it a secret, but it's for a sale I got coming up around the end of the month. And, you know, and anytime I make a fly for a sale, I'll kind of strip the words off and turn it into a goofy little sticker. So I've got a drawer full of goofy little stickers now.
Nice.
And, you know, some repeat customers I know that I'll get, I mean, they just don't want the same stickers. So I kind of can pepper in different stickers for my new, for repeat customers and that sort of thing. But everyone still gets a brush. So,
yeah, I tell you, man, those brushes, I use them all the time for maintenance. It's just indispensable in terms of like trying to like brush off algae on rock or frag plugs.
Egg crate. I mean, good for cleaning egg crate. And little holes, or if you got frag racks. No, it's a wonderful tool. And I think, I mean, the story's on the site. We could go, I think we've probably touched on that a couple of times, but just a goofy thing that kind of fell into my lap. And now I have a guy down, Putang Reefs actually is his company, but he also owns a laser etching business.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've gotten them from me, but now I'll get a couple thousand of them sent to him, and he'll etch my logo in the brush.
I got that. Yeah.
So you got the logoed version.
Cool.
Yeah. So
really cool.
So, like, I made it even cooler. Kind of dorky, but whatever.
Hey man, you got to dig it.
It's a battle. I mean, it's a battle brush.
Yeah, it is. So I know Polo 1126 mentioned the hyperberries and all that stuff. I have that coral. I got that from you a long time ago. I sent some to Chris Meckley at ACI, and he says his hyperberry is growing like a weed finally. You know, it's a we might have talked about this before, man, but that is like one of the nicest strawberry shortcakes that I've ever you know, had in my collection or ever seen. It cool. is a it is dynamite, nice, man.
Yeah, nice red on that one for sure.
And the other crazy thing about that coral, it is a canary in a coal mine for me, because it's happened like a couple of times where that coral has just browned out on me, and no other corals in my collection brown out, but the hyperberry browns out on me. And I, you know, and it was weird because it happened to me, you know, in the same system. I had different frags of it in different tanks, but it was all connected by the same mm-hmm. system. And then, so in one of the frag tanks, I, you know, maybe 7 or 8 of the frags just browned out on me. But in a tank connected to that system, it did not brown out on me right away. But then a month or two later, it did. But they all came back. They all colored back up. And that's like one of those hard things to explain.
Any idea why? Like, could you pinpoint just a quirky elk? You know, elk maybe does a little flutter on you or something.
It,
like that,
it had me flummoxed, and it happened the same thing to Chris Meckley. He told me that his browned on, you know, out on him too, and I don't think he came up with a theory on why that happened. It's just one of those mysteries, man. Right, in this hobby.
SPS, man.
It's like, why? You know, there's just so many unanswered questions out there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, that's the SPS. Usually my response is that's SPS for you. And I'm glad they didn't die. You know, I mean, it was something at least that recovered. But some little environmental tick that ticked it off and then it recovered from. So do you still have it, though?
I do. Or, I mean, you still got do. And I've got many, many frags of it that are just in their glorified, cool. colorful state. So
glad to hear that. Yeah, that thing's been with me a long time. Now that I think about it.
So that's never happened to you? That thing's never browned out on you?
Not my colony. I think the frags do go through a little bit of a stressful after fragging. I mean, it seems like a lot of times they don't get in the most opportune places either on my rack. So it's not necessarily my barometer for issues like that, fortunately.
Right.
But I have other corals that do exactly like you said.
Right. There are corals that are just specifically, I think, much more sensitive than other corals, so it's a I think it's a really cool thing, but it can be frustrating at the same time.
I think like the better of an observer you are, I think the more in tune you get, because some people may not even notice little things like that. But when you can, you know, when you know everything you've got, and even when it comes like a rack full of frags, you're like, oh, that little one has a little something something, and you can pinpoint that. You know, you're tuned in whether you know it or not. So. Now, whether you can fix it is a different story.
I know. You know, I just recently went through an episode where I had extremely low nutrients for a few weeks. And one frag, you know, turned pale white. It didn't lose all its color, so I didn't toss it. But you could just see there was like just a little sliver of color left on the frag. But that was kind of like, you know, the forerunner in terms of what was to come next. Because then a few weeks later, you know, a good chunk of frags just really lost a lot of color, and I was doing like weekly ICP tests, and I could see my phosphates were really low and all that stuff, and I had cut down on the feeding and the phosphate dosing and all that stuff. So it's just all of a sudden, like over a couple of week period, a lot of color I lost from the frags. So I you know, I increased nutrients, especially the phosphate, and you know, it's remarkable how resilient acros are, because the colors are coming back. But that's happened to me before, you know, in terms of like just a nutrients bottoming out.
So you think it was a nutrient?
I think so. I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something that you know, if you ever experience color loss, is that kind of like your primary culprit?
This is a good segue, because yes, in fact, and that even kind of leads me to another thing I was going to touch on. But I had kind of been pretty rogue about nutrients even up until last year. You know, I was even kind of like would take pride in how I don't really measure them and yada, you know, that sort of thing. And I think it finally caught up with me, because I, you know, even the last 2 years had tank doing good but not great, you know, even issues I couldn't really explain. Well, I have since gotten a little more diligent with nutrients, and now I'm even testing every week, sometimes twice a week. But about a year ago, I put a couple algae scrubbers on. I posted a video of me cleaning my big Deltec skimmer head. Like, I got this giant, and I'm not even running that anymore, but this big giant Deltec skimmer cup. It's the 4580, just that big beast thing. And somebody posted, dude, just get an algae scrubber. Like, because I was kind of, it was kind of like a joke video of me, like, oh man, this big clunky thing, it sucks. And a guy just mentioned, I'm not even sure who it was, but he just said, get an algae scrubber. You'd be surprised at how well. You know, you won't need a big
skimmer.
You won't have to clean that big skimmer head. And I did. I went out, I got the ice cap skimmer, that little in-sump white, little white in-sump skimmer, the big one, I should say.
Scrubber, yep.
And now I've got three of them on my main. And that was another thing I saw, a couple things that I saw at, gave me a turnaround. I think that Reborn kind of came back. I don't know if you can use Reborn.
Yes, I use it, yep.
But, you know, during COVID, they kind of had that weird small stuff. And I think I might have had some issues with that. But so the Reborn came back and things seemed to snap out of it. And I started running these algae scrubbers and paying attention a little bit more to nutrients. And I will say this past year, I think I've seen the best growth kind of I've been keeping them stable. I've actually been adding nitrate because I'm just like that stasis. I've got stasis now, where in the past, I think it was, like I said, I was kind of a rogue nutrient guy.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, I don't really care. And maybe just got lucky. But the algae scrubbers have made a massive difference in overall nutrient kind of stasis and stability for me, for sure. Like, no doubt about it. And I've since shrunk down my, I'm running a way smaller skimmer now too. So, you know, like kind of a little bit of give and take in that regard, but.
So for me, I put an algae scrubber online and it, I think that kind of was leading to, that was part of the problem because I typically like run kind of close to, you know, I'm run very low phosphates and low nitrates. And then I put the algae scrubber online, and I think it pulled too much out and it brought it down to a danger line there, especially with the phosphates. But with you, what are you testing out now in terms of nitrates and phosphates?
I'm glad you asked that, because I've actually been posting on Instagram like my little egg Hannah egg readings. But my last nitrate test, and I had been running maybe 5 for about 6-7 months. And I've just recently started pumping it up a little bit. I'm running 10 nitrate now, and phosphate is about 0.08, which I've kind of been hovering it around 0.08 under 1 phosph for a while. And I haven't had a whole lot of trouble keeping phosphate pretty straight. Nitrate is what I've been having to add. And I'm using just the liquid, you know, neonitro, whatever that is. And but again, another thing I think I've noticed that being a little bit more in control of those nutrients, I have found has been really beneficial to my system. Like, I got good growth and I got good color in the past, but I think this has really allowed me to get things dialed in. You know, like, I was just kind of naive and stupid about it. Really.
No, you know, you're successful. I mean, it's just, you know, I think.
Yeah, and maybe I got lucky. I used to do a lot, you know, maybe I did a lot of water changes. You know, maybe I just got lucky. One thing I know we talked about last time, too, was detritus. You know, I was kind of on this detritus thing where you said you used a lot and I'd been trying to get rid of, you know, clean my system. And I've still gone back and forth on that. But I just recently reinstalled kind of a homemade fleece filter that I've made. I mean, my water is like dirty. I mean, I can almost see it's yellow, and I don't have a lot of places in my sump that I can churn up. I mean, if I put a pump in there, it would be a cloud for probably like a couple of days. But I think that there is room in my system for continuous just fleece filter, just to detritus filtration to some extent. So.
Yeah, yeah. I've done something in terms of my mechanical filtration too. I mean, I have these Royal Exclusive Dream boxes, and there's like 10 nylon filter socks in each of these boxes. So, and there's different micron sizes, and so you know, I had been cleaning them like once a week, but the smaller micron sizes were getting clogged up. You know, basically I really needed to be cleaning them twice a week, but I wasn't. So
were you washing them in your wash machine or no?
I garden hose hooked up to a slop sink so I just blast
actually,
them. Yeah.
Let me stop it right there. Just a real quick thing. I don't know if you're still washing these. If you're going to somewhere else, I'm sorry. But I have this little like battery Ryobi pressure washer. Yeah. And I did a video about that, but man, it's wonderful for cleaning stuff like that. You just do it in my sink, I hook it up to a little hose kind of under my sink, and compared to like a garden hose. Anyway.
Yeah, where I was going is I actually just pulled the smaller micron sizes out and put in the larger micron sizes. So now I've got less mechanical filtration with the thought in mind of I was probably it was probably not a good thing in terms of it was probably elevating my nitrates and phosphates because there were just dirty socks clogging up sitting there, right. You know, in the system and putting it back into the to the system like that. So I don't know. I mean, I've been making tweaks like that.
So how many socks? 10, so it has like kind of like that per, platform.
Yeah, there's like there's a two rows big. Of four and a row of three. I think it is. Does that make sense?
Is it no, like, two does rows. Does it cascade? Like, is it all the same platform, or does it cascade?
Yeah. So
I'm wondering. Well, keep in mind, as those filter socks get clogged, like the micron size essentially does get smaller. So if you've got I don't know what micron they are, but you know, once it's clogged, water's still going through there, but it's just trapping even smaller stuff. And
It was also kind of blowing through the each of the different levels. So the lowest level was which had the smallest micron sock size. Pretty much the water was blowing through that. It wasn't even going through those socks when they're clogged, which is not a good thing, you know. So, right. You know, I guess we always have to adapt and all that sort of thing. But sometimes you get a little bit lazy and it takes a while to make changes.
Are you still running the scrubber?
I took it offline.
Yeah. Well, so all that tells me, this is it's almost like kind of the poor man's Triton method, that if you are running that, if you're dropping nutrients that low, you do have the ability to add them, you know, at your discretion then, you know, and there's something to that. And I'm going to plug Todd again, because somehow he kind of I got a couple of scrubbers with him. I traded him a couple boxes of battle brushes for one of those scrubbers. So he's the only guy out there that actually has them. You could probably buy them from him. But anyway, he said, you know, if you're running scrubbers, you might want to consider adding trace elements.
Yeah.
This is all new to me. I didn't know anything about it. And I have been adding that immolate. What the heck is it?
Isolate
called?
MT?
Isolate.
Captivate aquaculture?
Yes. Yeah. Which turns out to be super high, because I was on Frag Garage and we talked a little bit about this back in spring, really high in it's basically iodine and nickel. So if you add a lot of it, you're going to find out that your iodine and nickel are going to go through the roof, which mine did, and they probably still are. But oddly enough, I haven't had any horrible problems with it. I've dialed down the dosing of that. But another thing you might consider, if you want to put the scrubber back on, this is more advice for you. It was kind of where I was going with that, you know, maybe even trace elements might have got a little sucked dry.
I'm probably going to keep that scrubber offline, because I keep my systems pretty clean. I do the siphoning of the detritus every other day in the display tanks, the frag tanks. I keep the frag tanks like really clean now. So I think...
Do you dose like carbon or anything? Or do you do anything like that?
I do activated carbon, carbon dosing or anything like that. No.
You're just running a clean tank. I mean, that's pretty good.
I'm relying on water changes, skimming. I was dosing the Captivate Aquaculture Remediate, which is a dry bacteria, but I stopped doing that because, again, that's going to be pulling down the nutrients a little bit. So I've doubled down in terms of what I feed with my do-it-yourself coral and fish food. And, you know, man, it's a delicate balance. It really is.
It is a super delicate balance.
And you got to like just, and I'm looking at my corals and it's like, all right, I guess the change that I've made have been working, because the corals are coloring back up and things are looking good.
That's the ultimate, you know, what am I trying to say? If the corals are doing good, you know, you're doing something right. I guess that's my roundabout of what I'm trying to say. But I'd be curious, question for you. You're making your own food?
I am.
And you're just like chopping up.
I'm chopping up like I go to the supermarket. I get it's a good chunk of it is salmon, you know. So that's a little pricey, but I try to get the cheap salmon fillet steaks.
So do you have a lot of fish though? I mean, I guess I'm not even sure.
Not a ton of fish, but you know, it's not a heavy bio load in terms of the fish and all that stuff. But you know, so I've got a good chunk of it is salmon. That's good because it's, you know, it's high in the fatty acids, omega fatty acids, whatever is in the salmon. You know, some scallops, some white meat fish, some shrimp. I throw in some reefroids, some nori's in there, some Vitachem, you know, for the fish there to help them get some vitamins. I don't know. I posted a video on my recipe. So
I think I saw that. I mean, this is ringing a huge bell, actually, but that's cool. I've kind of been a pellet guy forever just because it was cheaper. And for no particular reason, I decided to start using Rod's food, just like the regular herbal
stuff.
Rod's food. Definitely good stuff. And that's kind of why I asked you, because where I was going to go with that was, do you add any of like I know he's got like oyster eggs and a lot of that little kind of small particulate stuff. Do you put any of that in with your food, or do you have any of that?
What else am I putting into the to the food? Not a ton of other.
The refroids.
You know, so not really a ton of other stuff that is specific for the corals. So it's just really, I'm not dosing amino acids. So I think that's a lot of that is within the salmon that's in that food.
Right.
You know, the same kind of stuff. So yeah, it's. I don't know. I had been doing like frozen mysis and frozen brine shrimp cubes.
Right.
But I think my fish are a lot happier. Maybe the corals are a little bit happier too. But it's also it also like, saves you money, man. You know.
Right. That's the one thing. I mean, I like rod food, but it's not cheap.
No.
You know, it's really not. And then you know, you got to get six or seven things of it. It does add up. So like, I may talk to you a little bit after the show.
But let me tell you, man, my wife,
I think I'm ready to start doing
my, my wife is never really happy when I, make a batch of that stuff because the kitchen gets,
do you have a separate blender for it or do you use the family blender?
I have one of those, what's like the meat grinder, thing. It's a, it's actually a machine. It's, you can use a food processor, but okay. I have one of these, it's called a meat grinder. Is that what it is? I can't remember the name, but I could send
like
you
one of those bullet things or something like that.
It's what?
Like one of those bullet things or like those.
It's, you know, like basically you put the fish or the meat or whatever in the top and then it's a grinder. It's like a grinder.
Grind
it just grinds it out and it kind of slowly, pushes it out through the front. It's freaking awesome. But I make a, you know, it's a freaking mess. It's a mess.
Right. I can imagine. Cool stuff. Though. I like that.
Than from Tidal Gardens is wondering, what state is Battle Corals located in?
Oh, I'm in Wisconsin, dude. Just a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Yeah. How far away is that from Copley, Ohio?
Not far. I mean, I got a good buddy, Tim. And we've been trading, you know, since before even was a business. And he has made the drive a couple times. You just kind of drive. I mean, you kind of got to drive down the bottom part of Lake Michigan, and then you're into Illinois. And I'm just on the other side of the border. So it's probably, I mean, I don't exactly know where his shop is, but probably like a 5-hour drive at the absolute most, I would imagine.
All right, let me put a link in the chat here of what I'm talking about for this. And I don't think this is the exact. I don't have this particular. Brand of meat grinder, and that's I see Todd is saying it is a meat grinder that I'm talking about. The heck was the brand that I'm using here? They're not cheap. This one's only like $200. That's a lot cheaper than the one that I have.
So how much do you make at a time? Just enough for like a couple
lot.
Months, or just a massive brand?
Yeah,
right. Even that's a good time saver too.
Yeah.
Then, right?
Oh yeah.
And you know I would imagine that ingredients for humans. I mean, it's probably better meat and better whatever anyway compared to like what goes into fish.
And what you do is you soak all the meats in like RODI water or even like, probably RODI water is the best thing. And
sure.
Is that not letting me post this link here? What happened? You soak that in. Oh, it's too big. The link is too big. You soak it in RODI water to let all the phosphates leach out. So that's the key thing, doing that for like a an hour or something like that. But we digress.
Yeah, good stuff though. I mean, I like that. Like, I know it's we're nerds, man. I mean, there's no other way I can put it.
Rich Colombo's asking either of you guys running UV or ozone continuously. You go there, Adam. UV, ozone.
It has been off and on. I haven't ran ozone for many many years. I have three big. Massive the Pentair UVs plumbed into my main and they're off now. It just seems, I guess, I don't know if I ever really saw anything to the better. I mean, at this point, I should say no, intermittently at best, or sometimes maybe in the wintertime when I know it's cold, I'll let it run and get it. It's not necessarily free heat, but it's maybe doing something. I would say ultimately not. The answer would be no, you know, very irregularly at most.
You know, I've been off and on with UV, and I found another link for the meat grinder here. So let me see if this will work. And this is the brand that I use. It's called Lem Products. LEM is the type of
is the grinder.
Yeah,
is
the grinder. Oh, okay. And they're on the website. 10% off if you unlock for your first order $50 or more. I'm
I will definitely check
it
out.
I'm not getting any money out of this, but that's the meat grinder I use. There's a whole bunch of different models on there, but I find it a lot easier to use a meat grinder versus a food processor, because the food processor really chops it up into very, very fine bits, whereas a meat grinder, right, you can basically grind it up where it's going to spit it out in larger particles. And if you want to get them smaller, then you just run it. Sure. They got different attachments that you could use to make them smaller, or you could just kind of like run it through the whole thing again, and they'll become smaller.
So how long have you been doing that?
A couple of years.
All right, so you're well into it. Cool. And you think you've seen a pretty legitimate, I mean, they have good response, good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you just put whatever you want in there that you like. You know,
right? Do you ever put like garlic or anything like?
Yeah,
I put the
garlic extract in there. I do that.
Sure.
What else have I put in there? Spirulina powder. You know,
put that
in there. Cool, man. Sure. It can really be a lot of good things in there that both the fish and corals enjoy. And like I said, it is economical for sure.
I like that a lot too.
Chris Carney's in the house. What's happening there, Chris? All right, dude. What was I gonna? UV. So, I've been running it on and off for a number of years, but now I've got it on. And reason being, I think that it's not gonna be a thing where it's gonna eliminate all the fish parasites, right? There's going to be a lot of things that it's going to miss, but I think it will help in some of those parasitic things that happen with fish. But I think the other thing is that it might help to a small degree with some coral pathogen stuff that might be in the water column.
I was curious about that for sure. I mean, that was something I've been trying to even research a little bit, but I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, I know it's easier to kill bacteria than it is to kill actual, like, parasites, like free swimming parasites,
right,
with UV. So, there, I mean, there's something to
that. I mean, I know
on
my aquabiomics reports that I've done over the years, when I've been running UV, there is a certain bacteria, might be a group of bacteria, that the UV does zap. And so the...
See, that's interesting to me. And you were able to say this is before and this is within.
Well, yeah,
this is
Eli, and I'm gonna have Eli on the live stream. Is it next week or the week after? And he basically has said in the past, like when he's seen my results, like, okay, well, you're running UV because I know this certain bacteria is missing. So But I think the big thing also is dinoflagellates, and I am fairly certain. Well, I can't tell. I can't tell you if this is true or not, but I wouldn't be surprised that the reason why I didn't have any dino outbreaks when I had my nutrients crater on me is because I was running UV. Mm-hmm. You know, and
yeah, people swear by that for sure. I mean, I know that has kind of like in the list of like what do I do? That's usually number one. Like try that. For dinos, for sure.
So I think, because I had dinos a number of years ago when I started one of my new tanks, and then I put UV on that system, and like within a week it was gone. So I was lucky that I had the waterborne variety, the type that's in the water column that the UV can take care of. So, I had Julian Sprung on once, and he said that, probably every tank has dinos or certain percentage of it, and it's just a matter of like, certain conditions or water parameters or whatever, like just brings them out to
right. Well, I think new tanks are super vulnerable to that, you know, especially, and of course, like you said, nutrients bottoming out seems to be like the number one cause for stuff like that. But I almost want to say this is probably an age-old debate at this point, but you know, the absence of like actual live rock, I think, may have has had a lot to do with not even resurgence, more like the appearance of dinos even within the last 10 years, I would say. Just because it's you don't have the diversity and all that good stuff that goes along with that, but I guess I think I've been fortunate. I mean, I think I've had little bubble strings pop up every once in a while, but it's never been they're all competing,
right?
Everything's kind of competing, and as long as you don't hit that spot that makes them thrive, they don't thrive.
So yeah, so. I think running UV 24/7 for me with this recent episode with very, very low nutrients, perhaps prevented a dino outbreak. I think that would be my guess.
You're probably right. I mean, unless, yeah, I guess you never know. I know that even a healthy pod population can really help with stuff like that too, and that sort of thing. So, but they do say, you know, when phosphate bottoms out, that's usually like what happens next.
Right.
I mean, short, like right. Coral anomalies, coral
right.
stuff.
So we mentioned refroids and whatnot. Do you, and we've talked about this before in the past, have you changed up your routine in terms of feeding coral specific stuff, or are you
You know, I've never been a huge, amino acids. I kind of went down that rabbit hole years and years ago, and I wasn't, I guess I wasn't too crazy about that. I think the rods food has really been my magic bullet as far as like coral feeding, and even I have been peppering the rods with refroids a little bit and benipets and some other little. I think I've got some tropic marin, super small particulate stuff like that. I've been throwing into my mix, but I think that the rods food covers a lot of bases for coral food. With some of the small particulate stuff. So nothing directly marketed as coral food or like weird liquids and that sort of thing. Although I will say I bought a bottle of Acro Glow.
What's that? Acro Glow? I've never heard of that.
I'm glad you asked. It is not Triton. I'm so sorry. The Blue Bottle Company. I cannot believe it. I think it. Oh my! I cannot believe it. I can't think of this. Been around forever. The Zeovit, like the Zeovit. One of those bottles. And I have. You can kind of see behind me a little tank right there. I set that up back in last August. This is kind of my experimental tank. There's a couple bubble tips in there and a couple hardier SPS. I'm going to see what happens with that. It's called Acro Glow. There's no ingredients, nothing like that. So they just claim it'll make your millies like happier. We'll see what happens. But other than that, I've never been a big fan of, the old rule, if you can't test for it, generally don't add it. And I guess that's kind of how I've done things for a long time.
Yeah.
But I'll let you know if things in there look really good after I start dosing Acro Glow, I will let you know. But it's just another one of those products, we'll see.
I dropped a link to the video I put together a few years ago on my do-it-yourself coral and fish food. The recipes change a little bit, but yeah.
So let me ask you, does this chat stay up after the video is posted?
Yeah.
Like, can I go back
yeah.
and click on it?
Yeah,
cool.
You should be able to see that. But I'll send you, if anybody wants it, I could send you my my recent recipe. It kind of like morphs over time.
Cool.
But
yeah, right. I hear you. I mean, that's so does all my methods as well. I mean, it's kind of funny because I used to do these write-ups pretty often.
Yeah, what happened, man? You're not doing any more write-ups, huh?
I think I just got busy.
You got no time.
Things happened. Well, partly I got no time. I mean, maybe I do, maybe I don't. But I think like the reading enthusiasm is not what it once was. It's like as much as I hate to say it, like people kind of need that stuff spoon fed to them through social media. And I'm not like making fun of anyone, but like I could kind of tell that like the engagement kind of. I mean, I don't know. Maybe just my writing was getting worse. It could have been all
no,
me.
No, I don't think so, man.
But I mean, the thing is, I got a whole bunch of topics and a whole bunch of half-written things, and every once in a while I try to plug one back in. But there was a little stretch there where it was always like, yeah, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and even all of that. I guess where I'm going with is even that kind of stuff like is completely different for me now. Like I'm doing something different in some regard or another. Kind of like I was talking about, like I'm testing nutrients now. Where before I'm like, ah, don't test nutrients, that's for the birds. So. My methods, some of the like the minutiae of my methods changes like the winds as well. So
I hear you, man. So Matt Reeves is saying Acro Glow spiked my zinc. We're talking about you're talking more about doing more testing and all that stuff. What about ICP testing? Is that something you've done more of?
Yeah. I like to do. I mean, I was kind of a Triton guy for a while, and like I said, I've got a box full like 30 or 40 of the fauna marine ones now because they come with the bags. And I like to send them in, and I've got a bunch of systems. I only test my main and my backup now, and I probably will test some of these peripheral ones. But I haven't. It's sometimes you can get smoking guns. If you've got a problem, like a long time ago, I had to redo this. We probably touched on this probably in the first one, but I had some plumbing issues, some floor issues. I can't show the camera, but my whole shop is upstairs. And it was like the first or second year after that. And some of the floor wasn't quite, it was a little sketchy. Had to redo a ton of plumbing, a bunch of long plumbing lines. And this was kind of right when we had ICPs available to us. Anyway, redid all this plumbing and I had tin through the roof, Corals did weird, everything was kind of weird for a while. I would have never known, just one of those things. I would have had no idea what was wrong. I wouldn't have been able to pinpoint it. So when you get, when you, it's good to get like when you can get a smoking gun or eliminate any possible smoking guns. I mean, I think they're really good for stuff like that. I do know more recently, like Moonshiner's Method, which I'm super not that familiar with, but it seems like that's kind of an integral part of that whole system, which seems, I mean, a lot of people I know that are way better at this than me are using that as well. So I think I should probably explore that.
You know,
myself.
I'm doing something similar. I'm doing the Captivate Aquaculture. So you said you're doing the Captivate, Isolate MT, which is kind of like a catch-all trace element additive,
right,
where it's got multiple
right.
trace elements. So I'm doing Fautamarine ICP testing, and I'm doing the mm-hmm. Captivate Aquaculture trace and minor stuff, and you can get that stuff with Todd at Champion Lighting Supply. I sell.
Yeah, that's where I got mine. Well, he's the one who suggested that I do it. You know, I had no idea, and he just said keep an eye on that. But I will say the last ICP test I had, you have to go easy. A little bit of that goes a long way. But the trace elements, it's essentially iodine and nickel. So unless you don't want skyrocketing, sky high nickel and iodine,
Here's the thing for you, man, and I do this with the Captivate stuff, is I'm dosing mm-hmm. individual trace elements. So wherever I'm seeing deficiencies okay. or if there's stuff that's
sure.
over,
Based on the ICP test,
there's a calculator on the mm-hmm. Captivate Aquaculture website. It's like an Excel spreadsheet. You pop in your ICP test values, and it tells you how to adjust them up or down. But if you're dosing like 5, 6, 7, or 8 different traces, you don't need 5, 6, 7, 8 different dosing heads to dose those things. You can mix them in one vessel. So I use like a 1 gallon container, and you put them all in this container. You put RODI water in there and dilute it. And so you've got a trace element cocktail that you make yourself. So,
and you're using a dosing.
I'm doing it. I'm dosing it 24/7. So
Your nutrient depletion or your trace element depletion, is that predictable though? Like it's that you're able to, like you know that it's not. I mean, like I guess what I'm trying to say is you know that you need that much.
Right. I mean, I'm basing what I need to dose based on the ICP test results. So if I'm deficient, you know, I'm bumping it up. Like if it's down 20%, then I'm bumping it up 20% or whatever like that. But being able to dose 24/7, I think it's true with anything you're dosing, is that if you could spread it out over the day versus dumping it all in at one time or just a couple of different times.
I'm guilty of that.
Me too.
So how often do you do ICP tests then?
You know, I've been doing them on a weekly basis, but typically I do them on a monthly basis. I'm doing them weekly because I've really done a lot of changes to my two systems. I tore down both display. Sure. I took out all the corals in my display tanks. They're all in my frag tanks. So I just wanted to be able to get a good read on what is going on with both systems on a weekly basis, because, I thought I had a good read on them, but I had that, you know, nutrients cratered on me. And so even though I was trying to be diligent, it kind of snuck up on me. But, so I'm doing them weekly, but I'll probably go back to monthly once I start, replanting frags in both of those display tanks. But, I think monthly is fine. And you can make a cocktail that lasts a month.
Yeah, that's interesting. And based on exactly what you know you need, I mean, I like that a lot compared to just a commercial trace element, and you may be adding more than you need, and that makes sense.
And the thing, and I'm not trying to knock moonshiners, but the negative with the moonshiners is what I see is that if you need to do 7 or 8 different things from moonshiners, you can't mix them. That's my understanding. So you would need to dose them individually. If I'm wrong, somebody please correct me in the chat. But
Do trace elements play well if you combine them all? Like ultimately, sometimes, maybe sometimes not. Or...
With the Captivate stuff, it's not a problem.
Yeah,
you know, I've been doing it. So,
yeah,
and I know Chris Meckley
the
ACI
testimonial is right there.
Yeah, Chris Meckley at ACI does it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty I mean, I keep hearing more and more about this moonshiners for sure, and I'm like kind of usually the last one at the party with stuff like this anyway, but.
All right.
I feel like I should probably explore that a little bit more.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's always something, man. You know, it's always something.
It is always something. Indeed. Indeed.
So Matt Carlton is asking, Adam, what is your choice of lighting? I'm a metal halide guy myself. So we talked about this, but I do have a picture of your lights over your raceway there.
Yeah, and you know what? I was going to even say today, Keith, I'm going to send you a couple more videos of the other raceway that has the halides, and I thought it might have been too late. I didn't know if you already had the slideshow prepared, but I kind of regretted not doing that. I'm still running Iwasakis. I mean, every year I think we have this conversation.
Yeah.
And
still
and
doing it, huh?
Absolutely. I've got probably – well, and the age-old myth of you can only run a ball for a year, like I've – That's
you're blown
that's
by long, that.
And that's long been debunked by me. The ones I've got up there, I think I've been running for about 3 years now.
Oh, really?
So based on and they're bright as can be. Coral's happy. Based on that, I've probably got about 10, 12 years left of actual Iwasaki lamps to run here. So I intend to do that as long as the ballast lasts. And is that my favorite? Is that the best? I mean, at this point, I will say I think I'm kind of phasing out T5s. The first conversation
really?
We had,
yeah.
I probably said, oh, T5, I like what they do. I like the effect. I don't like how clunky they are and how having to replace, 100 bulbs. And, like, a lot of my ATIs are kind of rusty now. And it just, like, I'm kind of, at this point, I'll tell you this. I'm only running one 70-inch or however long the longest one is T5 now. I've switched my whole backup back over to LEDs. And I don't think I'll go back. In fact, if anyone needs any used
T5s,
actually, I've got a couple of brand new ones I never even used.
Really?
I bought them, I never even used them, like ATI, the Sun Power. Anyway, between buying bulbs and, like I said, just kind of the clunkiness, replacing fans and yada yada, I'm phasing T5s out. Having said that, you can't go wrong with the Iwasakis. I mean, the corals love them. The color's great. I mean, I've been saying that for years and years.
Yeah.
But I'm also a Reef Breeders LED guy. That's, kind of my LED of choice, and I've been using those since, if you look behind me, that's an old V1 black box Reef Breeder, and next to that is the new Meridian. I got a kind of a pre-sample of that. That's not the finished version, but kind of where new meets old is right behind me. And, I mean, you can't go wrong even with the original Photon, so, like the one in between these two.
So
you can't go wrong.
A reef keeping buddy of yours, Tim Herman, runs those.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because I was like, Tim, you should get these.
Dong Zhou, who's a frequent.
Coral, I mean, I don't know if you've traded with Tim, but
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Tim's one of those guys when I said there's people that are way better at this than me. Tim is one of those guys for sure.
Yeah.
His stuff.
Like, yeah. We definitely swap back and forth.
Yeah, no.
Dong Zhou, another frequent guest on my show, who grows the crap out of SPS. He runs Reef Breeders. So
they're good lights. I mean, and I will say, I will be happy to plug them, because if you like the V2, I know these new ones are a little pricey, but it's an incredible fixture. I mean, they really, it's cool. I will say, I like it. I've got a couple 63-inch ones upstairs that they let me kind of sample. So
I run the GHL Mitras, they're LEDs, and mm-hmm. and I was scared as shit to run them, because I'd always been running metal halide lighting, but
so you did the old, my tank is under halides, I'm gonna swap, like you did that.
I started a new tank with the LEDs.
Okay. Okay.
And
it wasn't like I'm taking the halides down,
right,
and I'm putting the
LEDs
up.
I didn't do that. But
okay.
Although,
I think that's where a lot of people kind of ran into trouble, and maybe that was early on, like when the transition was happening between the halide and like things were, the technology wasn't maybe all there. It, like, we're way past that. LEDs work really well now. I'll just sum it up.
I've been blown away. I mean, I've been blown away in terms of the colors and growth I'm getting
out of it. You don't have to buy bulbs and like all that good stuff. Like I used to have to run a lot more. Like I have two AC air conditioners up there. I mean, a lot of that stuff, it's kind of a relief when you don't have to do all that between bulbs, heat, and yada.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I'm not sure we talked about on the live, but maybe before we went on the live, was some of the things you've kind of changed up since we last talked, and you mentioned something to me about Kalkwasser.
Yeah, well, I think I was in the throes of my Kalkwasser issues even last year. I had, for some reason, I think my buddy Tony at down in Illinois, he actually moved to Indonesia, but he kind of got me on the Kalkwasser wagon, and I decided to jump on, and before I knew it, I was running Kalkwasser at night and trying to have my reactor run during the day and just doing this kind of split thing, and my tank suffered for sure. I mean,
really?
I think everything was out of whack. I never got it. It just wasn't dialed in. I was chasing pH, doing all that stuff. And it was about last, maybe July, when I finally just said, all right, I think I'm just going to ditch the Kalkwasser. Like, I don't know if I got a bad batch. I don't know if it's just not working. But that was one of the things that I just said, screw this. I'm going to put the reactor back on full time. My pH may get a little bit low at night. But, like, that was never a problem before. So, like, I kind of had this you know, kind of phantom idea of, oh, I got to have this high pH and maybe things will be better. And it nothing like it only it was like it didn't like for me, I had the opposite effect. Like my tank suffered tremendously. Like I think whether it just wasn't dialed in, I mean, alkalinity wasn't really as stable as I usually normally keep it. That was a huge thing. When I went back to that, and I think this was also during the period where I think I was using that Reborn that may have been a little questionable as well, you know? Yeah. So, you know, there were a few things kind of swinging at me there. But one of the things, like I said, like getting rid of the whole, like it's off completely. I don't have it. I actually gave one of the big funnel things away.
I don't have it.
And, you know, yeah. And I've got a couple more here. I actually have three that are just kind of collecting dust. But and another guy actually made, and I feel really bad, Sam, I'm going to plug him at Parle Aquatics, made this like motorized thing for me for it, 3D printed with a tie motor and everything. I never used it once. It's like collect, it's just sitting dry. So if you, maybe someone has one of those, like that wine fermenter thing that I had. Anyway, works great. Just didn't work well for me. And maybe it's just because I just didn't have it figured out or just wasn't doing it right. But that was between that and I did actually end up switching salts. I went to Red Sea, and I will say the only reason I even decided to switch from Red Sea, and this is kind of a snobby thing, is that I can't get a wholesale anymore. I have no complaints about Red Sea at all. I mean, I haven't had any problems, but this was coming from kind of that Tropic Marin fiasco, like back in 21 or something. Yeah. That's another thing. I don't really know. Maybe I had some collateral damage from that. You know, I still don't know. But all that aside, the Red Sea salt was another change. And and paying attention to nutrients, you know, holy cow. Like the easy thing that you think most people do, even like when they're brand new, I just wasn't doing at all. So kind of pretty like normal things, nothing really dramatic. And I think even feeding the rods food was like, I got to a point where like I am adding nutrients to the point, or I'm removing nutrients where I can add them, you know, as I need them. Yeah. That's kind of what I was telling you a little bit earlier, where if I want to keep my phosphate there, I can do that relatively easy and feed the crap out of my fish and coral, and with the help of the scrubbers and all that good stuff. So otherwise, you know, nothing major. You know, I haven't added any system. I had a couple fish. My friend Marco at Exotic Reef Creation, I've decided to add a couple more fish and that sort of thing. But, you know, pretty much doing the same thing that I've been doing for a long time. I know that kind of contradicts what I said about my methods change like the wind. But, like, the core of my method is just keep it simple and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I'm always experimenting with little things, but generally, you know, skimmer, water changes, you know, the old fashioned
stuff. That's what I, you know, I just kind of find like gravitating back to being more simplistic with the reef tank and the less stuff that I'm adding in terms of
right.
Food.
Well, that's kind of with all this Kalkwasser thing I had going on. It was too much. I had dosing pumps and this and that. Like it was kind of like something had to give. And for me, at least for my system, it didn't. Well, meanwhile, while that was going on and my main was kind of suffering, my backup system, which is like the most neglected system I have, was just doing great. Like most of the frags I sent out in that year were from the backup system.
Really?
Because it was just doing great. It just plugs away. It had a calcium reactor. You know, it was just kind of an autopilot, which it still is, and still looks great. So kind of a testament to. I will say, however, though, that was a system that all my live rock from the old system and the basement system went into the backup system.
There you go.
So there's something to be said about
that. There you go. So the new system was started with dry rock?
100% Marco, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So there's that debate as well. We can maybe save for the next discussion. But, you know, it's been 2016, you know, since I had the shop upstairs, and it's stable. I mean, I don't have any problems with the rock. But I actually have pulled a lot of it out. I kind of find myself, you know, I had a lot of rock in corners of some of my main raceways, and I almost just needed room, and I've been pulling rock out, oddly enough. So I guess that is one thing I have done, I've been doing as well, kind of just without.
You should sell live rock.
I got a garbage. Well, I would. I have nowhere to, like,
it's
store
tough
it
to ship.
Wet. Yeah, well, I have nowhere to store it wet, even. Like, I have no, like, if I have a place for a tank, there's corals going in that tank. Yeah. I can't. I mean, even this tank, this white tank behind me is my scrub tank. Like, if I do get an order of wild stuff, it goes in there before it goes into quarantine. It's just kind of like my scrub tank.
You could, you can do a, like, a cryptic sump type of thing. I got a cryptic sump. It's like a.
I do, actually, I do have one. I suppose that's another thing. I kind of happened organically. It was a refugium. It was a space for my. And it's another thing. I'm sorry. I was going to send a video of my. Of the gear side, and I just thought, a lot of people don't really care about that kind of crap, but I did take a video of, you know, kind of the mechanics, and I didn't send it to you either. But I do have a small chamber that I have a cryptic zone in there for sure. And I don't know. I mean, I think that I think that there's something to be said about that. Sponges and that sort of thing.
Yeah, a lot of microfauna, just sponges, right. Filter feeders.
No light at all. I mean, it's
no
completely
light at
dark.
All. Yep, I've got like this 2x2x2. It's a cube, foot mm-hmm. long, 60-gallon cryptic.
It's like a remote.
Yep.
Crisp
zone? Yep. Cool. Yep. It's
actually
plumbed into my sump.
See this thing behind me? That's what this actually started out as. I had a shelf, and I ended up taking it down because it just kind of made me nervous. But I had a shelf upstairs. I should have had a better video of upstairs. But this was a cryptic zone filled with rock, and I just it kind of made me nervous to have it set up. It was in kind of a weird place, and I took it down a couple of years ago. But like the plan was to have that, and it's the cryptic zone now is much smaller, but it's just a big part. It's a little part of my sump that is filled to the brim with old live rock and. You know, I don't intend to take it or change it anytime soon.
So there's a number of comments in the chat. I don't know if you're seeing this, Adam, about ATI Stratons. Have you ever used a ATI Straton? And if so, what are your thoughts on them?
Is that a LED?
Yeah,
ATI
yeah.
LED? I haven't. Yeah. In fact, I'm completely oblivious to anything but the Sun Powers, which is just what I have. And I know that's like the clunkiest. I don't want to knock ATI at all. Like, I chose to buy the clunkiest light they offer, which is like it has two plugs and there's nothing, you can't program or anything like that. It's just a cheap, it's like the poor man's T5 fixture. But kind of like I was saying earlier, they're rusty and like they've just kind of seen, they're pretty worse for the wear. But I would imagine that, you know, they're a great company, so I'm not going to knock them at all. I would have no doubt. Are they T5 LED combos or no?
I don't know a lot about them. I don't know a lot about them myself. I have no experience with them, but people seem to love them.
I think these days you almost can't go wrong. I mean, LEDs are there. Like we are. Like you can't. Any commercial LED is pretty much gonna do what is gonna give you whatever you really need from it. I think at this point, it's just a matter of like what you want it to look like. You know. I mean, like they figured it out. It's been figured out. I'm actually running on my backup a couple of the Coral, the Philips Coral Care that I got from Carlo.
How do you like them?
One I got from Jake Adams. I traded him some coral for one of those, back before he passed away. But I like them a lot, actually. I mean, it's a little heavy, but there's no moving parts. So, I mean, the trade-off is actually pretty cool. There's no fans or anything like that. It just has a big heavy heat sink, and it's programmable. It's the closest thing to kind of a T5 coverage. Like it doesn't have that kind of shimmery glare because it has a big kind of a what's the word I'm looking for? Well, the cover is kind of a matte
panel.
Diffuser.
Basically the feedback I'm getting. Thanks, Paul. Great Bearded Reef. The ATI Stratons are flat panel lights, so they're similar to the light you just mentioned.
Philips.
Yeah,
Coral
the Coral Care. So. But yeah, they look Rich Columbus's. They look like the Philips Coral Care. They're like $1,800 each.
Okay. So big. Yeah. Again, if it lasts a long time, I mean, my philosophy is that if I use it a lot and it lasts, I have no problem spending money on stuff that's expensive. If it's a piece of crap and it's I guess you're paying for a brand name, a little different story. But I mean, that's kind of in life in general. But I would apply it to reefing as well. If stuff works and you use it a lot, it's worth. But it's worth it,
So Rich is saying, amazing that it became normal for guys to spend $5,000 to light their reefs. My mind is blown. You know, that is the thing about LEDs, that some of these fixtures, if you need a bunch of them, you need a pretty good outlay of cash. And then in about four or 5 years, you need to do that all over again because apparently the LEDs will lose their intensity over time.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, I know that. I think there's still people running the Gen 3 Radeons, and maybe they're not running them at 100%. I mean, longevity for LEDs is probably longer than, than we've been told, but, just kind of like metal halides. I mean, I don't know about you, but I used to change them after a year, whether they look different or not.
Nine months.
That was the thing, and I guarantee I threw away a lot of perfectly good Iwasakis without realizing. I wish I had those back right now, but... You know, like I said, 3 years, those have been going on 3 years. I think March of 2018 or 19. I got it written down somewhere, but they've been in there a long time now.
I used to, run, I still have some 400 watt 20K iridium bulbs that I'm running on electronic ballast, but I used to run them on magnetic ballast to overdrive the bulbs. So I think I used to.
That was a good. That was a good. I mean, that was the one.
That was like my bread and butter, yeah. You know, in terms of like color and growth. And I used to, I think, swap them out every 7 or 8 months. Because
yeah, well, when you the thing that was the one thing when you were overdriving those radium 400s, because those weren't even meant to be on the HQI ballast. I know that the 400s weren't. That would be maybe where you would want to, you would get a little bit shorter life. But I even think these Iwasakis are not made. They're on my Iwasakis are on M80s right now, and they're getting overdriven, and they've been overdriven like I said for 3 years. So. Again, although I had a thing many years ago, and there's still a thread about it on Reef Central of all places, where I was getting pink 400 watt radium bulbs. They turned pink, and there's pictures of my old tank, a long time ago, pink. Big 300 tank, and they burned pink. And it was a thing that was going on at the time. This is probably back like 2012. I mean, this we're talking a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I remember talking to Jeremy at Premium Aquarium. Like, it was a thing that was happening, and I think they figured it out, but I don't remember exactly what it was. But I moved from that to 250s after that happened. I kind of was a 250 guy ever since. With radiums, that is.
Yeah. I was gonna ask pink, you something.
Pink radium.
Pink radium. Yeah, that's. I vaguely recall that being a thing, but. Yeah, you know, I think so. You've got a good supply of the Iwasaki bulbs, 10+ years. If you said 12 years.
If my math is right, I've probably got because I can run 4 right now, but I've kind of trimmed the light. I'm running 3 right now, and like I said, if I need to run a fourth one, I can. I've got 4 reflectors. If my math is right, I've probably got about 12 good years. So I mean, that could be more. Who knows? A lot can happen in 12 years. I mean, but. You know, I've thought of when the time comes, what am I going to do? And, you know, it's going to be lighting. Anything that I would replace it with will be, I mean, any LED technology in another 12 years will be super impressive.
I bet you there's going to be some things that would just make the current LED fixtures out there right now obsolete. You know, I mean, in 10, 12 years, it's just going to be crazy difference, I bet. You know,
it's impressive as the technology moves. Bulk Reef posted... They had a thread a while back, not even that long, and they had something about the old Solaris. It might have been an Instagram post or something, and it was just kind of a throwback. And I remember that was like the PFO Solaris from 2006 or something. And we've come a long way from then. I mean, that's just to say the least. It seems like once we kind of got, like once the debate was over, like are they going to work or not? Then it was just like. I mean, that was it. The debate was over, and it's just a matter of, like, everyone's got LEDs now. It's not even – funny thing, like, I was paging – I found an old Marine Depot catalog, and I made a little Instagram thing about it. And it's just all halide, like a couple pages full of bulbs and ballasts and that sort of thing. Not an LED in the entire catalog. And, you know, now it's the complete opposite of that now, where people are like, halides, you know, aren't even – they don't even know that that's a thing. Never knew that it was a thing.
You know, by the way, I forgot to mention this. It was in the chat. A couple of people mentioned this in the chat. They said that they would welcome you posting articles or blog posts or whatever like that on your site. They would look forward to that there, Adam.
Yeah. I have had people mention that. And I actually, there's a spot on my site where anytime I would throw something up on Reef to Reef, there's a blog, you know, on the site, and it hasn't been updated probably since like 2017. So, like I said, I have a trove of half-written articles that, you know, maybe one of these days I'll sit down and finish. And, you know, whether people read them or not, I guess I don't even care. I suppose I need a little fire under my feet to get
it. Well, you're a busy man shipping out corals.
I have been busy. I did notice a shift, you know, some of that kind of goes back to the basement days where, you know, I did definitely have more time to like dedicate to stuff like that. There's something to be said about when you're busy, you're busy. I mean, that's all there is to it. You know, to sit down, like instead of sitting down and writing an article, although now with my phone, I can like dictate the article. So it's a little easier to maybe have to sit down in front of a computer and that sort of thing. But like I said, like I felt guilty that I kind of let that go. I mean, I kind of felt bad about that.
Well, you know what? I assume you're still a one man show. There's only so much.
Without a doubt.
There's only so much you can do, man.
Yeah, that's kind of how
you
it
got
goes.
A family, I mean, right? So.
Well, like I said, the good news is I'm busy, and the bad news is I'm busy. So that's kind of like that's kind of what I say.
Paul posted a link to your blog on the on your website there.
Aha, all right.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Reef Exotica by Luis A. Luis, my thoughts on LED bars. I have no thoughts on them, but I do know...
Like supplemental?
Yeah. Well, all right. So I do use the Reef Bright metal halide hybrid fixtures on one of my frag tanks. So that's got the Reef Bright XHOs. So maybe those qualify as LED light bars. And I do like them a lot because I'm using the 400 watt 20K radiums on those halide fixtures, and the XHOs are kind of like a blue light spectrum, and it really does make the corals in that tank pop. So I've got it kind of like those fixtures nice. Side by side with next to just the 400 watt 20K radium bulbs, and I do like the light bar, the highlight that it's a little bit more crisper blue, which I do like, you know. And I'm sorry.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Do you do like a ramp up or down with
no,
the LEDs?
No.
Just on and off. Yeah, see, that's yeah. I can appreciate
yeah.
that, actually.
I'm not a big, you know, ramp up, ramp down kind of guy, but now with my LED fixtures, I do have that programmed in there. So, yeah. But, I mean, when I used to, you know, run all the halides in my display tanks, there was no freaking ramp up or ramp down. You know, it's like I turned the T5s would, you know, would be like combination T5
Actinics,
halide.
Right.
Yeah, and Tenix would go on.
The Actinics turn on at 9 and then the halides come on at noon.
That's my ramp up and my ramp down. And then the halides go off and the Tenix stay on.
I know exactly. Yeah, actually, that was another thing in that catalog, like a big page full of VHO. I mean, it's kind of funny to skim through that. And it was just by dumb luck I had that in a file cabinet, but it was an old, and like a really old version of like the Neptune. Like the old Apex, like not before it was an Apex, it was like a Neptune or, you know, whatever it was, just super old, like cryptic looking interface and stuff. Good stuff. I remember my buddy Carlos from Coralview, before he was working for Coralview, we went down to his place in Chicago, and this is quite a while ago. I think it was, we went to one of those IMAX or something, and he had that, and I'd never been more impressed. He was like, this thing can turn my lights on, it can turn this on, it can turn that off, it can turn, and this is what got me the most. He said, if it gets too hot, it can turn the air conditioner on.
I'm really?
Yeah, it was like an old Neptune just aquarium controller.
Wow.
I never heard of such a thing. I had, at the time, I just had a Milwaukee pH controller or whatever. And but he's always been way ahead of the game with that kind of stuff. But I was blown away. But that's in the catalog that I was paging through the other day, the old Neptune whatever.
Interesting.
Anyway, good stuff. I mean, two old people talking about old stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man, I'm digging it. Love talking about this stuff. Changing topics a little bit. Well, you talked about when we're talking about photography and taking pictures of your corals, you're talking about fluffing up your, you know, you've got certain tricks to fluff up your SPS for the photo shoots. Let's talk about polyp extension and any tips and tricks for people that are trying to get maximize their polyp extension on SPS.
Well, for photography is different than
let's talk in the tank.
I would say so. You want to talk about display for photography or for healthy tank?
Healthy tank.
I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, it seems like.
Well, let's talk about photography. How do you fluff them up for the photography? You turn the flow down. Is that what you're doing?
Well, yeah, the flow is off, but I just put them in at night because at night polyp attention is really good anyway, and I'll let them sit for a couple hours, and then I'll turn the light on and take my picture. So like. You know, I got these corals, but he's fantastic. Like that top polyp comes out and it looks great. You don't really see that during the day anyway. But for polyp, I mean, the recipe for like healthy polyp extension, I think, is the same for like healthy coral. You know that, I mean, it's kind of like one and the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's a good indicator that maybe they're not happy, of course, unless you got a fish that's nipping or something. But, you know, I guess I do get that question a lot. And if someone's like, you know, polyp extension is not so good, the first thing I would suggest is to how do they look at night? And people have probably heard me say that 1,000 times, but you know, about an hour after lights go out, how do they look? And if they look all meaty and whatever, then you probably don't have a problem. If they are still retracted, you know, then it could be a chemistry issue or, you know, a number of things, pests, of course, little red bugs and this sort of thing. The secret to good polyp extension, I think a lot of it is genetics too. I mean, some corals have lots of meaty polyps and some corals just don't. Like even millies that have those, like, they're probably not even millies. We just call them millies, but they have those like stubby polyps that aren't those big shaggy millie polyps, you know, stuff like that. So it's like, why doesn't my millie have, you know, shaggy millie polyps? Probably because it's not a millie. And, you know, I'm the first to admit I'm the absolute worst at identifying coral species. So, you know, you can't blame me for that. when it comes to polyp extension, I would say it's directly related to coral health, you know, like no other.
What about flow? How is flow involved in that in that mix? I mean, obviously flow is important for SPS. What kind of are you still using gyras? Is that what
the gyras? Yeah, I think. I mean, in my case, or you know, any kind of like that style pump, I think, is ideal for shallow tanks. I mean, you know, you can't stick a big propeller pump. You're just going to blast your coral. So, I mean, that's been the magic bullet for flow in my shallow tanks. And my jars are still working, so I haven't had any reason to replace them at this point. But, in fact, I bought a few of the cloud ones. I didn't really need the cloud function, but I did buy some of those cloud ones with the new directional. You know, they have a couple directional cages or something like that. But, again, as far as, like, it relates to polyp extension, I mean, if you're going to blast the crap out of them, the polyps probably aren't going to come out so much. I mean, there certainly is a balance there. Like, or even, like, night modes where, I mean, I think that polyps are probably a little shaggier when the flow is less. Yeah. if I had to guess. I mean, if what you're looking for is polyp extension, but again, I don't know that that's really like the magic bullet for.
I think you kind of hit it. You know, one of the big points is fish nipping. You know, if you like to keep angelfish that might have a you know, might want a snack every now and then that is certainly going to impact your polyp extension during the daytime.
Yeah,
you know,
I have a lot of emerald crabs. I think they kind of get a bad rap, and I know that I know that they climb on my coral, and I know that sometimes they even nip the tips off of. But they do a great job at picking up all sorts of little peripheral algae and that sort of thing. So I don't think I would run a tank without them. But emerald crabs will certainly affect your polyp extension as well. And the good news is it's not every acro all the time. But you know, anything like that that's going to like roam certainly is going to affect.
So, dude, I got to ask you a question here because you know I'm battling some bubble algae in one of my tanks, and I just put in some fox faces, and the hope was that they would start kind of like attacking that bubble algae, but. You know, they're still kind of getting used to their surroundings and all that stuff. And I was thinking in the back of my head, I was like, all right, emerald crabs, I've done that before in the past. You know, I've seen them on my SPS, and you know, they do get a bad rap in terms of like, you get a bad emerald crab or something like that, and they're going to start
they'll scratch them. I mean, some of them get really big too. I noticed I'll get like 100 at a time, and some stay small and some get really big. They could get black and big.
That's freaking scary.
I've had to pull a couple. I mean, like, I've caught a couple just literally just breaking tips off. But again,
I think. All right, you just convinced me, man. No emerald crabs in my system.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of colonies, and, you know, I can, you know, I'm like, okay, that guy's got to go. But but at the same time, like, you know, especially on frag racks and frag plug, it's nice to keep that clean because I got to, you know, I'm shipping these to people and that sort of thing. So I think between those, and here's another thing, I probably have the most amount of like Asternina, I don't know how you even pronounce that, stars in my system. I have no problem with these starfish. I mean, I think they also get a bad rap. You know, I've had people say, boy, you know, that's a lot of starfish on these plugs. I'm like, yeah, but did you notice how clean the plug was?
That's what Than, you know, when he was on my show, he basically said that he believes that those Asterina starfish are like the best thing that you could have for a cleanup crew because they just are amazing with algae.
I don't think they eat coral. I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, they may inhabit a coral skeleton that is already dead, but I've never experienced one actually like eating coral. I mean, I don't think that they eat coral tissue or anything like that. But I have, I mean, just millions of them. And I used to kind of shake the plugs loose before I bag them, and I don't do that unless it's like, you know, bad. But, you know, I think they need to get I think people need to get acquainted with them a little bit more and realize that they're not I would never call them a nuisance at all. And even the little forktail, I don't know if they're amphiscalops or something, little tiny flatworm. It's not a acro-eating flatworm. It's not even like a planera flatworm. They just scavenge. Just a little scavenger that lives on the plug, and it's certainly not a pest, not a coral parasite or anything like that. You know, people see a little brown worm and they panic, and you know, I've had that conversation a lot, but you know, it's fine. Like, it's like, did you notice how clean the plug was?
Yeah.
Is usually what I have to say.
So Than has chimed in that Asterina starfish are wonderful.
Wonderful.
He says some do eat coral, but so do tangs.
So do maybe you know, emerald crabs, like I said. But I mean, if the ones I had ate coral, I would have no coral left at all. I mean, I guess I'll say that because they would have eaten it all. Fortunately, they just inhabit the plugs and the racks and that sort of thing. But you know, same with the emerald crabs, they just kind of live under the rack. And you know what I also think emerald crabs eat? The small I always forget the name, the little stringy things that everyone hates that in the little tiny shell.
Yes, I'm blanking out on the. Really, you think they eat those things?
The baby ones, they do for sure. I've seen them pick them off like the. bottoms of the plugs will have them on there. I know they're not going to maybe clear your tank out. They're not going to eat the big ones, but I've seen them rip the little tiny teeny baby
somebody,
ones.
Somebody dropped that name in the chat. I don't know why we're both spacing out on the name.
They've never been a huge problem for me, but it's those things that, again, people see those and they panic, and it's like, you know.
I've had
Emeralds help control those too.
I have them in the vermented snails. Thank you, Reef Keeper.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. That's them.
I got them, and you know, I see them casting the nets and all that stuff, and if, I guess there's one that's casting a net near an acro that I seems to like kind of pissing it off. I'll just, you know, try to like crunch it, but it's
It's another one of those things. Like, there's like things that aren't so great, and things that maybe aren't like appealing to have, and then there's things that are actually like problematic, and you know, a lot of that stuff I don't really. It's just, I don't consider it a problem at all. Like starfish, of course, not even close. Those vermitids, I wouldn't want a display filled with them. You know, obviously that's something, but you'd be surprised. A couple of emerald crabs, they're not going to clear them, but they're going to nip on those little babies for sure and probably keep them at bay. Yeah. And maybe that's why I haven't had a real problem with them either. But, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it's different because I'm shipping coral out, and you know, I don't want to have, you know, I don't want people to get nefarious things, but I guess there needs to be maybe a little better understanding of what is nefarious in that regard. You know, aphtasias, obviously you don't want that in your tank, but
I think also, and getting back to polyp extension is besides nipping fish are pests. So I think one sign that you don't have polyp extension might be that you might have some of those red bugs, black bugs, white bugs or something like that.
Yeah, red bugs, white bugs for sure. I mean, all that kind of stuff. I mean, those are like talk about kind of like the canary for sure when you've got it. I mean, a lot of times I'll say, like, if you see one coral that has a problem, you're probably okay. But if you start seeing patterns, then you might need to explore a little bit more. And that, you know, usually is when I start being a little more serious about things, if something's out of whack or something. But the good news is, like, those bugs are easy to kill. Yep. I mean, Interceptor or, of course, Sentinel is kind of what, oddly enough, this is kind of through my friend Carlos. But he said that Claude recommends Sentinel over Interceptor because it has this extra ingredient that essentially is like birth control for fleas.
Do you need a prescription to get Sentinel?
Unfortunately, you do. But you know, usually, it's funny because I had gone to my vet. You know, I have been prophylactically treating. You know, every year, maybe every year or two, just as a measure, in which I do take the emeralds out, and sometimes they can live through the treatment too as well. So if you do have, like, if you're worried, like, oh, if I have to dose Interceptor, I'm going to kill all my emeralds. Right. They haven't. I've been fortunate that it doesn't seem to kill emeralds. But, you know, print out some stuff. People, it's been around forever, like this Interceptor thing. Print out some stuff and, like, go to your vet and say, this is what I've got. This is why I need it. Usually they're pretty understanding, even if they're, you know, if they're completely confused, bewildered why you would need something like that.
My vet, you know, asked me for that information. I provided it, and he hooked me up.
Yeah, you know? Right. I mean, they're reasonable people. I mean, you know, I mean, unless you walk in there and you kind of look sketchy, and I actually had a funny thing on the phone. I was asking for Sentinel, and they thought I was asking for fentanyl. And usually they would just usually they would just fill it for me. And they said, no, I think you're not going to need to come in. You're going to need to talk to the vet. You're going to need a consultation for that. So I went in and I just said, yeah, I just, you know, Sentinel, like you've given it to me, you know, for years. And we thought you said fentanyl. Anyway, I don't even know if the vet could give you fentanyl, but needless to say, if you're asking for sentinel, make sure you pronounce it.
So
you know, carefully.
So yeah, Rich Colombo mentions there. So I've done this too, and I've gotten these chews from a like an Interceptor type of chews from a Canadian pet med site. I've done that.
Yeah, there's a few places. I think you could used to be able to get the Australian chew, like the chewable stuff. It's a big meaty thing, and I think it's bad for your tank. Whatever that
stuff is. The
same
thing.
It's
got Intercept.
Yeah, it's a big chew thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy, like, red bugs have never been a problem because they're just so easy to fix. I mean, there's a thread on Reef Central, again, if you turn back the clock way back, when I go into the name RTBM on there, I was the original guy who started using Sentinel when Novartis took Interceptor off the shelf. Like, there was a window way back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, where you couldn't get Interceptor at all. And, you know, I was like, well, there's this other product that is Interceptor, but it has this other stuff in it, and it's still on there. I mean, it's a big, long thread, but I was like, I'm going to try this out. I'm going to document it. I'm going to see how it goes. And, you know, here we are. But I would have no problem. I mean, I wish other pests were as easy. It's almost like fun. You just, you know, it just works.
Somebody's asking about, RC Reefer's asking if you have any pictures of white or black bugs. There's so much info out there on what they look like.
Black Bugs, I'm not familiar with Black Bug myself. I mean, I had no experience with those. I'm sorry, I just kind of cut you off. But white, there's a lot of pictures of white bugs, a lot of like magnified white bugs. I mean, it's a little pod, has kind of a little red eye and kind of a couple little legs.
Right. And I'm assuming, and somebody out there, correct me if I'm wrong, that Interceptor will take care of all bugs, or will it not kill black and white bugs? I assume that it would, since it's a parasitic copepod.
Again, I don't know about black. I think there are some information on the forums about treating black bugs with Interceptor. I'm not entirely sure. I know that it's red bugs are no match for them, and white bugs, again, I think that Sentinel is like it would be a better choice if you could get it, only because it has this extra ingredient that's, like I said, it's apparently like a birth control for fleas, and maybe that's more of a longitudinal prevention or something like that. But that's what the guy, the Faunamarin Claude, had suggested. So,
gotcha.
For what it's, but again, it's an easy pest. I wish, we're still waiting for like an acro-eating flatworm cure, or some of these bacterial things that, again, we talked a little bit about dosing and Cipro and that sort of thing last time, and I'm still on the fence, although I have been using a few months ago when they said Cipro you can't get it, you're not gonna be able to get it anymore. I bought a couple bottles, and I have been dipping new arrivals with it. I've heard some serious horror stories about maricultures coming in with some stuff, and I'm just not taking any chances anymore, but I'm still too nervous to dose my system. I did that too.
I used oxalic acid. I did an in-tank treatment in one of my systems. I mean, it worked, but that was a few years ago.
Did you do the aquabiomics and then did the treatment and then it was gone? Yep. And the tank was okay? Yep. Yeah, I've heard the story a couple times. Even Mike Paletta, I kind of talked to him a little bit.
Yep.
Another guy named Mike Berry, who really nice guy. There was a briefing that kind of came up about some acro disease and that sort of thing. And my name was mentioned on a video regarding a really old picture I have of a coral that I got from Gary at Reef Pets. I mean, long story short, I've been kind of talking with Mike. He's another guy, way smarter than me. So I like to listen to people who I know are smarter than me. And, he has treated with antibiotics. I just kind of wanted to hit him up about how did it work, what is a good dosage, yada, yada, that sort of thing. And essentially, any people like that I can get information from, I certainly will. When it comes to dipping, the horror stories are real, and they are like, it seems like maybe we just got lucky back then, or when corals died, we had no way to there was no metric to measure that it was a bacterial problem.
Right. Right. We didn't have that information.
Right. And now it seems like not only do we have that, but we also have a solution. And you, my friend, are even a living testimonial as well. You did it and it was a success, and then end of story. That ended and the problem was gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good news. Yeah. I mean, that's good news. So let me ask you, any idea like where it might have came from, or like just, I mean, that's a pretty hard thing
in terms of the protocol?
Well, like where, like how it got into your system in the first place?
I think, it might have been a drop in phosphates. I think it's anything that's just kind of, a big, something that upsets the equilibrium of your reef tank. I think is all those pathogenic bacteria need to kind of
explode.
I think we all have them, at some level, and it's just a matter of like giving them an opening to jump through. And so if there's any weakness in the coral, that the coral gets weakened because of a big alk swing or a big drop in nutrients, whatever, an overdose of iodine or something, it's like, hey, here we are, we're going to jump into this thing.
Bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you saw, so you were having coral that was kind of, things weren't going so great, coral dying.
Random STN, RTN, and then it was more frequent, so.
And it stopped.
And then it stopped. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a pretty good tool to have in the drawer. I know that the debate is
hard. And I know a lot of people out there going to ask me for my protocol and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry if I.
It's all right.
But
no.
I mean, I know that it's a hot topic, and there's people that are very, very against it, and they have a lot of arguments against it as well. But I mean, especially as a dip, I don't want that in my system at all. So it means I got to dip new stuff in antibiotics. I sure as hell am going to, because what's the alternative? Like to just introduce this to my, whatever the case is. It still kind of scares me because I just don't know enough about it.
And my reluctance to kind of like give out the protocol to anybody that wants to, ask about it, because, hey, I got a couple corals that are dying or something like that, I need the protocol. You know, antibiotics is like a major thing, you know, to hit your tanks. I mean, that's like kind of going nuclear. And, you know, I think we're still kind of like learning in terms of what the overall impact is long term of doing that stuff. And we don't want to like be doing that too often, because then you'll create resistant strains of bacteria. Right. And then eventually the antibiotics are not going to be working. So if we're kind of like constantly hitting that button to you know, all right, I'm going to hit the whole tank with the antibiotic, that's eventually, you know, according to the scientists, going to not going to work as well as it would.
And that's kind of what, you know, the screamers are screaming, you know, just having like what's in store. I mean, if it works now, you know, what's in store when it doesn't work or whatever. Right. But again, like, when I have people who are doctors and, you know, even like people like Mike Pelletta who have done this, and even people like you, you know, who have done it and have had success. I will say this: I've heard way more success stories than I've heard like everything went bad after I use antibiotics in my tank. So I mean, there's got to be something there, and I think obviously it's still kind of a wild west. There's no dosages. I mean, it seems like all that stuff is pretty, you know, nothing's calibrated to tanks or anything like that, but. To me, it seems like a pretty useful tool in the drawer, especially if you're getting new coral and if you're even importing coral, any of
dipping.
That kind of stuff.
I think dipping new stuff is a smart idea.
At the very least. And I will say, if my tank was crashing and I was having symptoms like that, I wouldn't hesitate for a second to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. I would, at that point, I would be like, sign me up. You know, if this is going to stop my problem, I'm sorry. But I'm gonna, you know, I mean, what's y'all? In fact, that happened to another friend of mine, a guy, again, smart people, who he runs, I don't know if he runs it, but he's part of a coral research place down in Florida. And he would buy like big battle boxes. Every time I'd have a sale, like big battle boxes. And I finally, you know, we finally started talking, and it was all for like research purposes. Hmm. And he had said quite a couple years back, he was having problems like that. And same thing, I think once Eli came out with a way to start measuring this stuff, is that's when people started you know, realizing that they could fix it with antibiotics.
Right.
So he did, and again, his problems went away. Smart guy, you know, PhD. I listen to people like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna say he doesn't know what he's talking about. So, you know, I've heard way more testimonials from people that seem to know what they're doing than horror stories. So if it means anything.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. Jumping back to the black bug and white bug question that I had, Rich, thanks for this information. He's basically saying that you need a higher dosage for the black and white bugs. He's saying 4 to 8 times higher than Dustin's red bug dosage. So you need a lot more interceptor if you got the red or the if you have the white or the black bugs. So
yeah. I've heard horror. It seemed like the black bugs, from my understanding, is they weren't even necessarily pods. It almost looked like a small worm or something. I mean, like, I don't really know. And I think I've been fortunate enough. I mean, I have a pretty ridiculous dip regimen, and you know, I hope, you know, hopefully I don't have to worry about that. But the stories I have seen seem like a pretty devastating, like of the three for sure, or of even compared to flatworms, that those are the ones that are spell doom for sure. So I don't know where they come from. I don't know exactly if they're getting passed around, but you know, in my experience, like white bugs and red bugs specifically are like nothing to worry about at all.
Right, because it's easy.
Just, you know, with regard to interceptor, and if you can get it, you know, I know a lot of places, like I said, I do a prophylactic dip or treatment in all my systems like every year or two, just as a means of, you know, precaution. So.
Yeah. Let me ask you, man, talking about antibiotics and stuff, have you ever chemi-cleaned any of your systems because of cyano, or have you ever used reef flux for bryopsis, you know, fluconazole?
Yeah, well, oddly enough, yes to both. I had way back when the system was new upstairs, I had separated one of the raceways, and I just set it up on its own, kind of had its own top off, and it had and there was like no rock in there at all. I don't even think I had a skimmer, just a bunch of frag racks. Did good for a while, and then cyano took over. I have no idea why. It was the only time I ever used chemi-clean. It went away, and that was it. That tank has since been plumbed into the main system. I think I drained it, and it's since plumbed into the main system. That's the only time I've ever had a real enough of an issue. I was like, all right, I'm just going to try this and see if it works. There wasn't much coral in it either, so it was just kind of like, let's just see what happens.
Yep.
And it totally worked. I mean, it definitely worked. The fluconazole, I set up a tank at the school. There's a couple of threads about it a couple of years ago, and we moved it last summer to a new room. She had a new room. It's this old 65-gallon Oceanic from the 90s. It was, like, given to a friend who was then given to me. Like, it kind of had been passed around. I used it forever. Anyway, long story short, set it up. And I even set them up with a little super simple RO unit. Like, I slapped them together an RO unit. Tank is doing great. There's some anemones in there, some, you know, super simple stuff. Covered with hair algae. I mean, like, it waves in the breeze, you know. And I'm not taking care of it, really. Like, she's kind of doing it, and she doesn't know so much. I think that the janitor is feeding, is putting food in there, you know, a lot. I think that's part of the problem. A
couple French fries go in there every now and then.
There's a fox face in there. There's a fox face in there that's, like, fatter than this water bottle. I mean, it's no joke. It looks great, happy. The kids love me. Super personable fish. Anyway, I just dosed it on Friday with fluconazole. So we'll see what happens. It hasn't. I don't know how long it takes. I know it works well with Pyrosis, but as of yesterday, the tips of the algae weren't. I don't. You know, does it? Maybe someone can answer. Does it work on all? Does it work on all hair algae, or is there some that isn't? Actually, I think I see Mike Berry's in the chat room. That's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are white variants.
Yeah, that guy knows his stuff, man. I'm really glad to even see that guy in here. Well, he was the guy. The video was about spawning. So he was actually, it was a big, like, an hour long video. I mean, just stuff that's over my head kind of stuff. But he was working on spawning. And the problem was that he was having some weird diseases that was kind of affecting the growth of the coral. And he was wondering if that was going to affect the spawning, that sort of thing. Wow. It was a good video. I don't know exactly what the link is, but maybe he could post it. If he wants to, go ahead. Anyway, you were just about to say something. I just noticed he was in there.
No, I was just basically going to, you know, my understanding is that fluconazole, I guess, can take out hair algae. I know that it's used to take out bryopsis. So, I can't answer your question in terms of the different types of hair algae.
Right. I mean, it seems like there are many out there. It's green and it looks like kind of the typical stuff. But as I said, there's a giant fox face and he doesn't go near it. I mean, I would have thought he would have just cleaned it up. Not palatable, at least to a fox face. I did throw a couple of emeralds in there and I don't know if it's still in there. But the algae has won the battle for sure. So I was going to text her today and see if – I just want to ask her, like, do you see any change at all? And I don't know. But I've been trying to get there every day just to
be sure. Have you tried sea urchins?
That was going to be my next that's my buddy Bill at Eye Candy Coral, also kind of served by urchins. If anyone wants to donate urchins to the school thing, I'll take some. I just didn't want to spend, you know, a bunch of money on urchins. Or even sea. I've had a lot of luck with sea hares in my backup system. Sea hares mow it down. I mean, I don't know if there's anything green that they don't eat, but then they just die. So,
and that's not good.
Yeah, I mean, they're not, they don't live, they, you know, They work only so well, I would say, but we'll see. And maybe I'll up the dose. I kind of went by the book when I dosed the school tank. We'll see how it goes. It's not Bryopsis, and you know, it's definitely just kind of your typical stringy, not palatable to cat to fish.
Yeah,
algae.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of it in there.
Yeah. No, that sucks.
I'll tell you this. Before we moved it, I'll just say really quick. Before we moved it, this was last year. We were just using water out of the drinking fountain. Like it was filtered, but not really.
Yeah.
And that tank was about the ugliest tank I'd ever seen in my life. Like, it had this weird black slimy. I mean, it wasn't like anything I'd ever really seen before. And the alkalinity was like 100. It was like, I mean, it was just, I tested at, you know, at one point I'm just like, this is insane. Like, there's nothing could live in here. Like, no coral could live in here. Cause it was something from the water out of the faucet. Anyway,
well, you know,
RO water is a good thing for, you know, even if you got to piece together a little thing like I did, a good idea.
Well, it sounds like it's an awesome learning experience, no matter what.
The kids love it. It's great. I mean, she even said, like, she's thank you. I mean, the kids just love this. I kind of built a little, like, shallow lagoon. Like, I turned the sump into, like, a kind of a little half lagoon thing. And that's another thing. I kind of wanted to put a mangrove in there, like some sea cucumbers or something, you know, arrow crabs, little goofy things like that, you know, the kids like. So, you know, that was a fun little project. Again, and this was all crap I had lying around. It was like an old tank, an old Deltec skimmer.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah, donating in terms of science.
And actually, some vendors have donated some coral. I will say, like, KP Aquatics donated some gorgonians and some stuff. So it's been a cool project. Coral View did donate a skimmer, you know. So it's been a collective effort.
Nice. All right. Well, anybody out there that wants to donate some of those sea urchins, Adam would love to hear from you.
Miss Canthag would be very happy if we got rid of that algae. I promise you that.
Mike Berry's posting the link that was discussed here in the chat. So, dude, I don't want to take up more of your time. You've been very generous with your time. Anything else? Oh, did we cover?
It's always fun.
Yeah. Did we miss anything, man, that you wanted to talk about?
If we did, we'll talk about it next time. Right. I'd say. I mean, this is always a pleasure, man. I have a blast. I knew that it was going to be better than last time, so I kind of went into it with a little bit better, like, spirits as it was. But, no, Keith, I mean, just thanks for having me on, man. This is great stuff. I appreciate it. And even I will say thank you to your sponsors as well. Like I said, I don't know Andrew, but those other two guys are, like, top shelf all the way. I mean, they're as good as it gets.
Farmarine and Champion Lighting. Yeah.
You're surrounding yourself with good, with good people.
I feel the good mojo behind me, I would
sponsor your show too. I mean, is that something, you know, I mean, I don't know if that's like a monthly thing or what I need to do, but I'd be happy.
We could talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a business. You could put my thing about that.
Now that I'm not selling corals, that's a whole other thing we were going to talk about.
All right, maybe we could do that for sure. I'd be happy to. I mean, dude, you've kind of scratched my back as much as you think I've scratched yours. So anything I can do to help.
Appreciate that, man.
I don't know how, I mean, I think it was kind of the beginning when you had me on first, but this is my fourth time on, so it's like you've managed to carve out a little niche here that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, now listen, man, I think everybody appreciates having you on, and we always awesome. Have really good, I just feel like, you know, it's always awesome to talk reef with another very experienced reef keeper and trading war stories. It helps me, man. I'm like, the questions I'm asking you are like, I'm trying to you know, pump information out of you so I can learn something, and hopefully everybody else out there is doing the same thing, you know, getting something out of this.
If the stuff we kind of have, you know, taking up space in our brains can help anyone else, then we've won. We at least can be winners, at least for today.
All right, dude. Well, listen, Adam, thank you again. I also do want to thank the sponsors again. Before I do that, plug in anything you want to, I mean, obviously battlecorals.com, but you mentioned a sale coming up.
Yeah. I mean, my sales are fun. I mean, I'm going to do like a straight up, like, there's not going to be any tricks or games or codes or anything. I mean, like, it's going to be a straight up sale. So you can look forward to that. Like I said, I'm going to just give you the quick teaser of what whatever. You'll see soon enough. Look forward on Reef to Reef or probably Instagram or something like that. But we'll do that in a couple of weeks. And I don't know. Like I said, man, thanks again for having me on. Right. I mean, it's always a blast.
Cool. Likewise, right, dude.
And thanks for everyone who joined. I mean, that I can't even believe it. This is my first time, for anyone who's listening, that I actually had YouTube open and could see the people on the thing. I never did that before either. So
it's a pretty cool thing, you know.
Definitely, it's way better experience even from where I'm sitting too. Because before, like, you were reading things and I didn't know what was going on, but much, much better.
It's a much more interactive experience.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I got a microphone too, so hopefully I don't sound crap.
Dude, the tech setup was like killer this time.
All right. Awesome. Keith, thanks again for having me on, man. I can't thank you enough. Let's do it again whenever you want.
Yeah, cool, man. All right. So listen, thanks again, Adam. I also want to thank Champion Lighting and Supply. Besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through the website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. Polo Reef, make sure to check out Polo Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday in the new Polo University episode. Andrew and Dr. Alex Hall, a well-recognized fish vet, look at ick, brookanella, and marine velvet in detail. Identification, quarantine, and treatment of these diseases are all covered on a step-by-step basis. Make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polo Reef for video drop notifications. My third sponsor, Fauna Marine. I do use the Fauna Marine Ice Reef ICP Total Test Kit, which gives quick, accurate, and easy overview of over 90 water values in a reef aquarium. From macro elements to trace elements and pollutants, you get a complete overview with corresponding dosage and action recommendations. I want to thank Paul, who is the moderator and also the president of the Boston Reefer Society. Thanks, Paul. Please join and support your local reefing clubs. They are so important to this hobby. If you don't have a local club, you could join the Boston Reefer Society. So you don't have to be in the Boston area. That's pretty cool. Finally, I want to let you know that all episodes of Rapping the Reef Bum are available as podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Amazon. My next Rapping with Reef Bum live stream will be on Tuesday, April 16th. Who is my guest? I don't have this written down. What the heck? Hang on. I don't know why I don't have this in my... What's that?
Eli from Aquabiomics, or no? Is he going to be next?
No, I've got Salen Clemens from he's a reef builders contributor and a coral researcher. Yeah, I don't know why I didn't have this down in my script, but yeah, Salem's going to be on the show next Tuesday, April 16th.
Well, you guys are going to be talking about antibiotics a little bit more.
I think so. So I got the full upcoming schedule of guests on reefbum.com under the YouTube section. So until next time, be safe and be well. Later.